Hi, welcome to the Havila Podcast. I'm your host, Havila Cunnington, and I am thrilled that you made your way to this podcast because we are in a fantastic series on relationships. I can say fantastic because my guests have, well, we've been hitting all kinds of angles, and today we're going to hit it from a whole different angle. The first of the month, we talked about how to function in a high-functioning couple relationship. The second week was all about sex and intimacy. You're going to want to go back and look at that one. And then today, we're going to talk about newlyweds. And I have our very own, well, she's a student at Bethel, but she actually serves and volunteers with us at Truth at Table. Abby is here, and she is like the maybe the closest newlywed to my life right now. Mm-hmm. And so she's from Australia. Yes, you would have heard her. We had a conversation on the prophetic a couple months ago on the podcast. And so she's back. And I loved our conversation before.
Yeah.
I feel like this is going to be just as good.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe tell everybody a little bit about yourself and maybe about your husband.
Yeah. Amazing. Well, I am Abby. I am from Australia. I was born and raised in Melbourne. And so I came over to America almost 3 years ago to do ministry school, to do Bethel School of Supernatural Ministry. And so I'm in my third year now with Hav and the team here at Truth to Table, which has been so much fun. And so we actually got married 2 months before coming to first year. And so here we are, freshly married, first time me moving out of home, first time all the things, and then we moved across the world. And so we had a lot of transition that happened within a very short span of time. I just had massive transition. And so we moved across to the other side of the world, to Redding, California, and tried to find our feet. And so here we are, almost 3 years married. And so my husband's name is Ben also.
Yes.
It's not Ben Cunnington. It's Ben Solomon. And he's also doing his third year at Bethel. And so we've both been doing school alongside each other as well.
And he's an Australian as well.
He's an Australian.
Yes.
Yeah.
And amazingly enough, I mean, when I got married, I was pregnant 3 months in.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of did a little bit of like deep dive. Let's just do something crazy.
Yep.
And you get excited.
Yeah.
But I'm curious, what has surprised you about marriage?
Oh my goodness. I was so naive when I went in. And I think I heard you both talk about this on one of the last podcasts with Michelle. Just, you don't know what you're getting into. And that was me. I was 21 years old. Like I said, I had never moved out of home. Like, I'd never lived out of home. I just had no idea what I was getting myself into. And so here we are, 21 years old, trying to figure out life. And I think I didn't expect the challenges that would come. Like, yeah. I was genuinely shocked by the fact that I had to work on things and that all of a sudden I had all these problems that I didn't realize I had. And I wasn't this perfect girl that I thought I was. And it was just this like overwhelming sense of, oh my goodness, there is so much to learn. And I had the perspective that I was going into marriage and I knew what I was going to be doing. Like, I just thought that it would be easy. I'd listen to podcasts. I was what I thought was prepared. And here I was finding myself across the other side of the world, having zero ideas what the heck I was doing. And so, what really just challenged me was the fact I was like, oh, this is hard and this requires work and yeah. It requires intentionality. And it's not something that I can just expect to fall into place and to be this perfect thing. But marriage actually requires work, and that's okay. And I had to overcome, like, I'm not a perfect wife, and that's okay as well. And that was my expectation. I was going to be Miss Perfect as a wife, and I wasn't, and I still am not. And it's just this beautiful journey of intentionality.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's incredible. Do you, now looking back, are you glad that you got married at 21?
Yeah.
So that was,
I am.
And how did you know that it was time to get married at that?
For us, it was like, I was 18 or 19 when we first started dating. And so I had known Ben since I was 11, liked him since I was 12, told him, wrote in my journal, I was going to marry him when I was 12. So I was just this girl, at a very young age, was just so sure I was going to marry this man.
Wow.
It went in its ups and downs, as you can imagine, when I was waiting for like 6-7 years to start dating the man. And so I think Yeah, by the time we were 18, 19, getting dating, and then 21 was engaged, and then 21 married. I think I knew because it was like this thing of, I couldn't wait 4 years.
Yeah.
Like there wasn't wisdom behind it. We had dreams. We had visions. We knew we were supposed to get married. And for us, there wasn't a purpose behind waiting five years to be what we would maybe, what I had deemed originally as the appropriate age of like 23. I had this idea of being married at 23. And so very quickly on, Ben had to help me discover like, oh, I don't have to wait to my perfect age to get married. But yeah, we're actually ready.
Yeah. I love that idea because I think I see people wait just for the purpose of waiting. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the Bible's really clear. Like if you burn with lust and you want to be together, you should be together. Mm-hmm. Like as long as there's wisdom built of counsel, but like there isn't an age thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I think it does help to wait as long as possible in the sense of, if you don't know who it is, you're not missing anything. Go live your life. When it's time, you'll meet the right one. But I do think that there's that wisdom that says, we know we're going to be together. Let's do this. And everyone's yes. And I don't think that there's anything. I mean, I've had most of my great friends have been married young. And I think it does tend to, again, it depends on the structure of the environment, how the parents nurtured them. And then obviously Ben and you both had a relationship with the Lord. You both had obviously a purpose to come across the States. There was some real clear, evident ways that you guys were like, yes. But I love that idea. I think anyone in a long-term relationship should ask themselves that question. What is the purpose in waiting?
Yeah.
Because to me, to fake being married and have all of the physical, emotional, all of that tied in without the commitment, I think you lose yourself in a way versus, no, I want to stand before God and man and make a commitment to you publicly.
And it breaks trust as well, which will impact your marriage.
It
and
does.
So there's no point going down that route because you want to build trust with your soon-to-be spouse rather than break it from breaking boundaries and things beforehand. That's really God designed to have in marriage.
That's exactly right. In fact, I remember when Ben and I got together, one of the first things I did was I called up some mutual friends and I asked them, what do you think about Ben? And honestly, all of them raved about Ben. And it was, I knew it was a risk to do, but I thought, I don't know him that well. And I would like to know. And I think friends are very honest. And I think it's a great way to know, like, hey, if I want to know about somebody, you know, if you have that kind of whirlwind of it's time, I think this is the one, then you can do your research and actually ask and take wisdom. And even Ben and I were asked to wait after we were going to get married and then asked to wait for a season. And we waited and we got married. But ultimately, I think when you know, and if you both are in yes, and it's, you've got those things in order, then absolutely. Okay. So let's talk about being a newlywed.
Yep.
What do you think culture is telling you as a newlywed? Mm-hmm. What are some of the things that you, maybe narratives that are following you right now as a newlywed?
Interesting. I think a part of it is like this expectation that everything's perfect. I feel like there's this expectation for people who are married to know what they're doing and to be perfect because I mean, it takes a lot of courage to talk about the vulnerable stuff and to talk about behind the scenes and to talk about that. And we don't have a lot of people who do that and who model that vulnerability for us. And so I think there's even this like facade of like everything's perfect, everything's okay. And I think that is a narrative that I see a number of people getting stuck in of like, we don't need help. We're good. We've got this sorted. Our marriage is perfect. And I think that's just one of the narratives that culture has,
I would agree,
is being creating for us.
That's right. It is very much, I think with marriage, it's like you're either fine, perfect, and no one says anything, or you're in tragedy and you are going to a counselor and you're falling apart. It's like, there's no either or. I feel like in our world, we either just, it's fine, leave it on a shelf, no one asks, you're by yourself, or, oh my gosh, they're not going to make it. And everyone, or it's just declared we're getting a divorce. And you're like, wow, I didn't, you know, no one saw that coming. And there isn't this, I don't know, this idea of nurturing the relationship outside of that. And I remember when I had asked Ben to go to counseling, we had done pre-marriage, but that's not the same as marriage counseling. And I remember telling him, he goes, well, we're not in any crisis. Why do we need to go to, you know, why don't we do counseling?
Yeah.
And I had gone through postpartum depression and then I had walked through that. So mm-hmm. I was really a fan of being able to like talk about things and get it out and have a safe place. And I said, the way that I just see it is like, we need coaching. Mm-hmm. We've never done this. Mm-hmm. And the truth is you're asking me and I'm asking you, but mm-hmm. we've never done this. And so things got very dramatic, really fast. Things got very high stakes. Things felt personal, mm-hmm. but being with a counselor allowed us to be like a neutral space.
Yeah.
And so I think sometimes we don't teach people about the nurture of the relationship and that there is a growth period, like a growth period.
Yeah.
And I don't think we ever talk about that. Mm-hmm. We just do pre-marriage. And then if you're in trouble, go to counseling, but there's no like the nurture of it. Yeah. And like the idea of it's gotta be perfect. And then if it's not, and then I agree. I see people that it's like they never asked for help. They never reached out and then their marriage is over. And I get so sad because I think I would have loved to have fought with you.
Yeah.
I would have loved to have been in your trenches to help you fight for the marriage. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know if all of them are salvageable, but at least have it given somebody else a chance to fight alongside of you.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people that are in desperate places in their marriages, they don't do that, mm-hmm. especially leaders.
Yeah.
Specifically leaders.
Yeah.
Leaders don't ask about marriages at all because it's your job. And it's your income. Mm-hmm. And I think leaders have a very high, it's a complicated situation because as a leader, your moral compass it's a requirement of the job. Mm-hmm. But if you were to falter in that, then you could lose not just your community and your status, but your income, your livelihood, mm-hmm. and your marriage.
Yeah.
And it's very complicated. Yeah. And so that's why I've always told people, you have to find a counselor. And I find that even leaders that are older, they tend to go, it's fine. Mm-hmm. And they're vulnerable.
Yeah.
They could easily have asked for help. They could have easily said, this is not working or I'm in trouble.
Yeah.
And they didn't. Because nobody demonstrated that themselves.
Yeah. And I do wonder if in these like early years of marriage, like you notice things that like it's seed form.
Yes.
And so I think what we see a lot in culture is like divorces are happening or affairs or things are happening, but a lot of them are happening down the road.
Yes.
And I wonder, and you can confirm or deny this, but I do wonder if a lot of it, if it was addressed in those early years of marriage, when it was a seed form and when you saw the flags, or maybe you saw like potentially how it could go off. And there's that like short percentile of compromise or just little bits of this and that. I do wonder if we catch it in those early years of marriage, what would happen in those foundation years to set up marriage for success?
Yes. Or at least have the structure that if you do hit a crisis, you don't implode.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Because what I found in my marriage is that you only get 100% of your choice, mm-hmm. but your choice is one choice.
Yeah.
And there are two choices. Mm-hmm. And two yeses make a yes. Two no's make a no, right? Mm-hmm. In a marriage. And so I can only be as powerful as my yes and my no in the marriage. But whatever they choose to do, you don't always have the power to control that. Mm-hmm. And so what I have found is it's not so much bubble wrapping your marriage to where there isn't crisis. Mm-hmm. It's protecting it with a strategy of community and spaces to where you can be vulnerable, mm-hmm. to share without it imploding. Yeah. And I think that's what I've found. I think marriage is funny because you do grow a lot. And when you first get married, you marry the person you think you're marrying, which mm-hmm. is not the person you end up with. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes you're not the person that they picked after a while.
Yeah.
And you kind of have these really, it's interesting. You know, they call it like the 7-year itch, different, where you come into these moments where you rediscover each other, mm-hmm. but you also can fall apart with each other. You become roommates.
Yeah.
You've got your kids, you've mm-hmm. got your job, and you just, the demand is so intense. You just go, I can't get to that person. Yeah. And if that person, your spouse is, you know, needs a ton of affirmation, needs a ton of attention, needs whatever, it's sometimes very complicated. And I remember this one woman, she was awesome. She was part of our pre-marriage counseling. Mm. And she told me this one thing one time. And I was like, oh, this is more true than I'd ever realized. She mm-hmm. said, you know, there was a point in my marriage when I started having kids mm-hmm. and they met my touch account. Like me holding them, nurturing them.
Yeah.
She said, I didn't have a sex drive. It was like all my physical needs got met with these babies. And she said, I had to realize that my needs were 100% getting met by these little ones. And my husband was over here waiting for me. And she was right. There was a moment when I was a mom where it was like, I am, my dopamine is high, you know, my serotonin levels, I am so happy, but they're not getting that. And you have this other partner that is with you that's trying. So I do agree. I do think they say, I think statistically within the first year, if a marriage doesn't make it, it's usually evidence in the first year that something was not resolved. There was something in it. They didn't listen. They didn't hear. They weren't honest, but there was something. So you're not wrong about that, that there's that in the beginning. And then I think for us, it was also helpful to understand what type of couple we were. Like we were non-traditional, although we both were raised in traditional homes.
Right.
Both our moms stayed home. Both our dads worked. That's how we were raised. Mm-hmm. So here we are, these both working.
Yeah.
We both came from families that didn't have as many kids. And here I'm working, didn't think I would be working, and had to really like figure out how do we do life together outside of that traditional. And it's and also kind of grieve. And I think in this generation, because of what's required for moms and dads and the incomes that are needed and the things that are just out there, it's complicated. It's not as easy. People have student loans. They have to pay those off. It's a lot.
Yeah.
And so I think it gets complicated. But I will say for Ben and I feel like there's always these like moments. Mm-hmm. I can remember in our first couple years of marriage, we would just cry and say what we felt and we were committed. Mm-hmm. But there was these moments where we would just break and cry and go, but we're in it together. And it was beautiful. And then there were moments after, as we gotten older and had more and more years, 18 years now, where there are moments in our marriage that have been very high and very low. And yet we choose each other again.
Yeah.
And I, every time I get to that point, I always think I made a powerful choice and my powerful choice was for him.
Yeah.
That's my powerful choice. And he does the same thing. Wow. But yeah, it's complicated. And honestly, Abby, I feel like as I watch other people's marriages, you never know what goes on behind closed doors.
Yeah.
And you never know. You just can't. You just don't know. And so it is a private relationship. And we will always, we'll never know. And so sometimes it's shocking to see. My in-laws just celebrated 50 years of marriage 2 days ago. My parents will celebrate 50 years in a couple, I think 2 more years.
Wow.
And it's amazing. But marriages work and it's a job and they do it. But yeah, it's amazing to be surrounded by two families that have been almost for 50 years together. It's wild. Yeah. But it's amazing. Even as you get older, you're like, oh, people can be married for decades and not be happy. Like, not that they are. I'm not talking about them, but I'm just saying in general, long marriages don't necessarily mean that you're happy either. So, but yeah, it's a very interesting journey.
It is very interesting. I love one thing that you said. You said not to bubble wrap your marriage, but to set structures in place so that when a crisis comes, like there's safety in that. Can you share a little bit about that? Like, what does it look like to create the structures, to create the systems, to create the culture, to create the habits, whatever it is, so that when crisis comes or when there are challenges, like how can we navigate that so that we're set up well?
That's a really good question. I mean, again, I'm only an expert in my marriage, but I would say a couple things. So for Ben and I, we never used the word divorce, never. And it wasn't like a, oh, don't ever use the word divorce. It was like a genuine, like I have never looked at Ben and said, I hate you.
Yeah.
I have these like inner, like boundaries, but that's a Havila thing. That's not Ben and Havila. That's me. Like I would not, because if I said I would mean it. I think that's more like if I said I hate you, you better run. Like it's not a safe, like, you know, but for him and I would say I had some really internal structures. So one of those was I did not use the word divorce and I did not threaten leaving or threaten to take the kids. I was very clear that if I was going to say I'm going to leave or I'm leaving the kids, I meant it. Yeah. And so I didn't cry wolf. I think that's very important in a marriage that we don't cry wolf, that we don't say, I'm going to leave you. I'm going to divorce you. I'm going to take the kids. I'm going to get out of here. I'm going back to my parents. I'm going to go back with my ex. I think those things are actually really dangerous to the marriage.
Yeah,
and we think it's just in anger and drama, but I think our words hold power, the Bible says. So we have to be very careful.
Yeah.
And then secondly, I did not. And again, I wish I was as smart enough to think this through, but now I can look back and go, I didn't badmouth Ben.
Yeah.
And there were times when I could have really unloaded just as he could, like, but I chose to not badmouth him because what I found was I would get over it, but the people around me wouldn't.
Yeah.
And so if I said something negative to my mom about him, or I said something negative to my friend, they would bring it back up. Well, didn't he do that? And I'm like, oh, that was so yesterday. And so I just found that it was best that I protected that, that if there was something wrong, then I had to be an adult and go to the person and talk about it, go to him or go to somebody that we both agreed upon.
Yeah.
But that he, I knew that I didn't want to be bad mouth. And so I don't think he should either. So I really was careful how I spoke about Ben. I didn't lie about him. I didn't prop him up. I would be honest about our vulnerabilities. You've been around us. I'm not propping it, but I am. I don't just bad mouth. And then I would say another thing we did was we each got help with a counselor, but separately. So I went on my own for a long time. Then we went together. Then he would go on his own. And we've always had a third party in our marriage, meaning we've always had a neutral third party that we could share because of ministry and because of being a leader. And I share a lot of things with my friends, but the protection of him and I as well, I like to have that.
Yeah.
And then... I will say that him and I, one of the best things we did in early on in our marriage is we learned to play together. Aww. And I just see couples, they don't have fun together. You know, they date, they're sexy together, it's romance, but they don't play together. Right. And I think in the long run, I wanted to marry somebody I could have fun with. Yeah. And when I was going to marry Ben, he asked me to marry him and I was really like, I don't know. And I called my sister who had, was getting married 6 months before.
Yeah.
And I said, what do you think? Do you think I should marry Ben? I don't know. I'm really struggling. I thought I was going to marry a guy in ministry. I thought we were going to go lead together. Mm-hmm. And she said to me, I'll never forget it. She said, you know, Havila, type A leaders are fun to work for, but they're not very fun to live with. Mm-hmm. And when she said it, I knew like, you're right. I'm not marrying someone to work with. I'm marrying someone that I want to live with. Yeah. And that was so important. And I look back and go, thank God I didn't marry any of those guys that I thought or would have wanted to marry me. I mean, thank God it was not an arranged marriage for ministry. Yes. It was. And so now we really enjoy each other.
Yeah.
I mean, last night we something hit our funny bone and we were crying. We were laughing so hard. Our kids are mocking us. But that's the part of the marriage that he's my friend.
Yeah.
We enjoy each other. We go play together. Mm-hmm. I think that's really important. Couples just don't do that. So that would be the bubble wrap.
Yeah.
And then there's always something to learn. We ask each other's forgiveness often. If you're not asking your spouse forgiveness, then you really have to ask yourself, what part am I playing in restoring the relationship? Because you're going to do wrong things. I'm going to do wrong things. But like, so Ben, does Ben ask forgiveness more? Yes. Guys always do. I think so. But in our relationship, we do always. And I would say this, somebody once said, don't go to bed angry, you know, and I have found that sometimes going to bed is the best thing you can do because sometimes you're just tired. You're irritated. You are hungry. You just need to go to bed, get a good night's sleep. And wake up in the morning and talk about it.
Yeah.
And I have found that as long as you're not running from the problem, but you're taking a time out, that's the difference. And the longer we stay up and fight, the worse it is.
Yeah.
But sometimes when we actually get up in the morning and we always revisit. So one of the things I learned was if it's getting heated and you don't like it or he doesn't like it, you can say, I'm going to take a time out. I need to take time out, but I will come back and you give them a specific time.
Yes.
I'll be back in an hour can we talk about this in the morning? Giving the other person that you're not disrespecting them by disengaging and peacing out, but actually saying like, I'll be back.
Yeah.
And then another thing I learned was if it's a very intense conversation and you know your tendency to be disrespectful, have the conversation in public. So we would go to a coffee shop and have a conversation because I knew at home it wasn't going to be respectful. But in public, it would be respectful. And so I learned that early on that if we were going to talk about serious things, even money for a season was that, you know, all kinds of things. We would just, let's go talk. And we wouldn't do it on a date night. We wouldn't ruin our date night. But we would like, hey, let's go have a cup of coffee and talk about this. And that really helped. Also, walking and talking was huge for us.
Sense.
I think being busy, moving. And as an ADD person as well, it helps me. But walking and talking has been very helpful.
Yeah.
So yeah. Those are some of my things I would recommend.
I love that. I'm going to even implement some of those things into my own marriage.
And I would say, don't idolize other people's marriages. Like some guys and women, you know, oh, we have the best marriage. Oh my gosh, his wife is so sexy. Like, calm down. Like you do your marriage. I'll do my marriage. Yeah. But, you know, we don't know what goes on behind closed doors. Yeah. And so I think it's very important to understand that everybody has good and bad in their marriages, period.
Yeah. I want to ask you a question of something that you said. You talked about the importance of not bad mouthing your husband. And I know there's this wrestle within newlyweds and maybe even just in the Christian world, in marriage in general, where as wives, we want to be honoring to our husbands and we don't want to say anything bad about them. And there's this desire to protect them and to love them. And yet there's this need to be vulnerable and there's this need to get help. And there's this need for the sake of the marriage, for it to last the long haul and for it to be healthy and thriving.
Yeah.
We do need that third party, as you talked about. And so I want to ask you, like, how do we create a culture in our marriage where there is vulnerability and we do let people speak into our marriage, but without bad mouthing our husband or without bad mouthing our wife?
That's a great question. That's a great question. I would say, first of all, I would never badmouth your spouse to your family because your family's blood and your blood has your back no matter what. I think blood talks to blood.
Yeah.
So I would say just in general, be very careful what you say to your families because your families are team you. Mm-hmm. No matter what, they're team you, as amazing as your spouse can be. Mm-hmm. And so I think that that is really important. And then what Ben and I did is we decided we'd pick people that we both felt safe with that we could talk to.
Yeah.
So we would say, okay, I'm going to go talk to her about our relationship. Are you okay with this person? Yes.
That's great. Yeah.
And so whoever we were going to disclose, we both had to agree upon.
Yeah.
But I didn't ask him, now what exactly are you going to say? And I let him, he's an adult. He can own that.
Yeah.
But I would say, can you leave that detail out? Or would you mind if you didn't say that part? And you can talk around it, but not that.
Yeah.
And he would respect that. And sometimes it would be, okay, share it. But often it was who we felt most safe with. Mm-hmm. And then I think there's a point where somebody in the marriage loses their voice. Mm. And I think it's very important that if you don't find your voice in that moment, it will really hinder your future. And I think it's important that you tell your spouse, I love that we are here, but I'm not willing to go forward without a vision for the future. And right now we need coaching.
Yeah.
And I think you are allowed to put some hard lines in there. And I see people wait too long.
Yeah.
And then they're going, and if the question is, how do I get my spouse in counseling? You're asking the wrong question. Because I would say to you is, you need to be in counseling to find the courage to set a standard that says, I require this to move forward, period.
Yeah.
And if you can't share that and you're waiting for somebody else to be the adult and be brave, then you still have some growing up to do. And that's okay. I did too. Yeah. At 29, 30, 31, I was going to counseling to be a grown up.
Yeah.
So there's nothing wrong with that, but you do need to find your own voice. And I think often people act like it's a marriage thing, but really it's a codependency versus so like you go get healthy. You find your voice and you might be shocked at how much they don't have to change because you are no longer waiting for them to change.
Yeah.
You found your power.
Yeah. Yeah. It's that whole mindset of being a victim.
Yes.
It's that whole mindset that keeps you trapped and keeps you bound. But as soon as you begin to realize that you're powerful and that you can make the steps of change regardless of them, it's amazing what can shift from.
Or like a martyr. Like, I'll just be here. You know, I'm just hoping they'll get help. Mm-hmm. I'm just hoping we'll figure it out.
Yeah.
I mean, the first thing I would say to people is stop making babies. Mm-hmm. And that sounds mean, but it's true. If you do not have a healthy marriage, stop making children. Mm. It is not fair to the child. You are not giving them a safe place to land. And as much as you love them and want children, you have to think beyond yourself to this child. And I see people do it all the time. Their marriages are a mess and they think, well, I had a kid. And the bummer part is it does add joy because kids are full of joy. There's not a kid on the earth that's a mistake. Like kids are joyful.
Yeah.
But the problem is that you're inviting them into a relationship that is not safe and secure, and you're inviting them into trauma. Mm-hmm. And so my suggestion is, again, this is not for those that don't know and they're doing their best. And I'm talking about those that know he's a deadbeat.
Yeah.
She's a narcissist. Don't have kids because that's just mean. and be willing to let yourself go, be willing mm-hmm. to let the relationship go mm-hmm. to find what is really worthy of putting kids in, mm-hmm. bringing kids into the relationship. Yeah. And I just, so people do it all the time. And it's sad.
Yeah.
And they just, I mean, I'm the one that ministers to them at the altar calls. Mm. You know, I'm the girl I'm the girl that's holding the little girl that, you know, and the divorce and that I'm seeing it. And so we can't dismiss that. Oh, it didn't matter. We're still friends. Mm. It's their parents.
Yeah.
You know, it's not normal for a little girl to only talk to her dad, you know, once a week or once a month. Like that's not a norm. And so it changes who we are as human beings. So that would be maybe it's a little bit of my rant, but I do think it's very important. Now, I've been in places where we've had a lot of kids and went, wow, that was crazy. Maybe we should have waited. Sure. Are babies easy to make? Yes. But I just think a baby does not fix problems.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they shouldn't come in with a job. Mm. A kid should not be born with a job to fix a marriage or fix a family or fix, you know, to restore a marriage after an affair. That's not fair to a kid.
Yeah.
Let the kid come in with the job of simply being a child.
Wow. I love that. Let the kid come in with the job of simply being a child.
Yeah. You know?
It's powerful. And I even love what you said before about the importance of having, when you're asking someone to speak into your marriage, to have both the husband and the wife agree that this is a person that we both trust.
That's
I think that is so key to have both, rather than it just being one-sided, but to both be on the same page in that level of agreement.
Mutual respect.
Mm-hmm.
If I could say anything about marriage, it's about respect. Respecting my body, your body, my relationship, your relationship. Like, it's about respecting them as if they are your family member, your brother, your sister, right? In that way of like, this is my best friend. Would I talk to my best friend like this? And I've had to ask myself that. Would I talk to my best friend like that?
Mm-hmm.
Would I write a text to my best friend and just send it off?
Mm-hmm.
Probably not. Mm-hmm. So why am I allowing myself to do that to him?
Yeah.
And I mean, I have done things that I go back and go, I wish I had never done that, you know, but you just do it out of the heat of it and you're immature and in pain and you just do what feels right at the moment. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But and then also I would say, don't give up.
Yeah.
Don't give up. Sometimes when you think, I know Ben and I both have said, there's a time in your marriage you go, did I make a mistake? Like, I love them. It's nothing about them, but like, this is so hard. This is a lot of work. Is this a mistake? And it being tough does not mean it's a mistake.
Yeah.
But I would just say, don't give up. Don't give up. Keep trying. I know couples that have gone through hell and come back and they have the best marriage.
Yes.
Best marriage, best 10 years of their lives after a tragedy of a affair or after the tragedy of a loss of even of their marriage and been remarried. I mean, it's amazing what can happen.
Yeah. It really is.
I want to say one other thing too, which I think is really powerful.
Mm-hmm.
I want to talk about how do we keep safety in marriages in terms of affairs, emotional affairs, physical affairs, and all of that.
Yeah.
And I just listened to something recently that I loved. And for me personally, I've always been able to keep a pretty high standard in my life.
Yeah.
You know, I've always been faithful to Ben. I've always been true to him.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm by myself a lot. Mm-hmm. I've been hit on the road. I mean, it's a lot of things that happen.
Yeah.
And one of the things that we've learned is to be very honest with each other. But one thing that I loved was quoted, I think it was Esther Perel. She said, anything, what is an affair? What is infidelity?
Mm-hmm.
Anything that is a secret.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved that because in your marriage, if the text message is a secret, if the DM is a secret, if the phone call is a secret, if the meetup is a secret, if the lunch is a secret, if that is infidelity in a marriage.
Wow.
And I loved that. And I don't think she's even a believer, but I love the standard in which she put that.
Yeah.
Because that is the only thing you're going to know. Like you and Ben, you're only going to know what's infidelity when it's a secret.
Mm-hmm.
As long as he knows it. Like, and I've told Ben that, I don't know why, I just need to show you this text.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but I walked over here and we had this really funny interaction. Nothing happened, but I just want you to know. And I don't tell him everything that I doesn't want to know, but I don't like anything to hide under the surface to create something that's like a fantasy. Because women can create fantasy like a fantasy world of romance and love and oh my goodness. And no, it's like, so I'm very honest with him. Yeah. And I don't try to tell him things that will throw him off in the sense of like, it's not important, but I do anything that I feel my heart trying to hide,
yeah,
I get it out.
Yeah.
Even if it's a, why did you do that? Why did you say that? What was that?
Mm-hmm.
I will bring it because I think it's important.
Yeah, I love that. It really goes above reproach.
And yeah.
I think the biggest cry of so many of our hearts right now is like, Lord, we just want our marriage to last the long haul. Like, we just want to last the distance.
That's
We're
right.
seeing so many marriages fall apart around us in this culture, and we want our marriage to last. And unfortunately, the statistic with Christians and non-Christians aren't any different.
Nope,
with divorce rates. And so it's like, how can we go the extra mile? How can we be above reproach so that our relationship does last? And we really want that. And I love that. Like, anything that is a secret, like, bring out anything that is a secret. And I think that's really...
Don't you think?
Yeah.
Because I think anyone who had any kind of inappropriate relationship, it mm-hmm. started with I didn't show them the text. I didn't show them the DM. Yeah. I didn't show them.
Yeah. And I also think of like the enemy, how he can totally flip the switch and make you sudden feel shame for something that
yes.
you didn't even do. Like, for example,
so
you know, like someone's hitting on you and you're like literally completely out of the equation. And I have this a lot where there's, and you're the same. There's guys hitting on you and you're completely out of the equation. You've got
all the walls up.
All the walls are up, right? And mm-hmm. but it's so interesting how the enemy can then flip it and put you into shame so that you don't share that with your husband or you don't do this. And then it's mm-hmm. like all of a sudden you're in this like shame spiral and now you're no longer being like, you're not sharing with your husband these things. And
that's
so
right.
I think that's really interesting how the enemy will then like twist it.
I do too. I also think too, marriage is a sacrifice
mm-hmm.
and there's something really fun about being liked and mm-hmm. having somebody hit on you and somebody enjoy you and
yeah.
you being, and I think some of the sacrifice of the marriage is saying no to that,
mm-hmm.
is saying, I'm putting up all the walls, but I'm also going to tell him, which means I don't get to play this story out in my head and make a whole world out of it.
Yeah.
But like, I do think that's a sacrifice. I don't think I knew marriage. You know, here I was a 26-year-old woman and I had been, you know, a lot of guys had liked me at some point and I was used to like getting them to like me and having fun
yeah.
and then moving on. And
yeah.
I was that girl, not on purpose, just mm-hmm. I lost interest quickly. But I think now looking back, that was very sacrificial because I had to decide, am I going to be attractive to everybody
yeah.
or am I going to like actually fight to be attractive to one?
Yeah.
And that means I'm going to have to like not create that energy, almost that like the not encourage the energy that you get when you're noticed and acknowledged
yes.
and flirted with and all of that, but to go, no, like that's a mirage to what I'm actually building. And I acknowledge it, like, that's great. I'm glad that you think I'm attractive. Awesome.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I don't know who you are. You could be a crazy person. I don't know who you are, but
mm-hmm.
ultimately, it's part of the sacrifice of marriage. If I wanted that, then I would stay single.
Yeah.
And that, I think a lot of girls, we miss that. Like, I don't think you look up exes. I don't think you text people privately. It just in the sense of people that you had a romantic,
yeah.
I think you gotta be very careful.
Yeah.
Like you said, the enemy is coming. He's mm-hmm. coming. And you know, for men, I mean, women, again, our vulnerability is fantasy. And for men, their vulnerability is pornography. Although statistically, it's getting more and more similar with women and pornography. I think it's 7 out of 10 women and 9 out of 10 men right now currently view pornography mm-hmm. consistently. So it's very high. But I do think it's that, I guess it's the fruit. Like, okay, if I build this romantic story, where's it going to go?
Yeah.
And what it's probably going to do is make me compare it to my husband. And then I'm going to look at somebody across the room and think he probably does that. And then it messes with my head.
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
I actually have to be in truth. And truth is I'm married. Truth is this is how he flirts.
Yeah.
Truth is this is how I feel with him.
Yeah.
And like being honest with ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that sometimes can be sad.
Yeah.
I hate to say it, but it can be kind of a grief at times to be like, it's over.
Mm.
Like my fertility, the you know, there's something very powerful as a woman with her femininity and sexuality. It's very powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be very, it puts the power in your hands.
Yeah.
And that's why the Bible warns us about women, because women know mm-hmm. that when you have that. And so we see that. And I think that's the vulnerability of marriage and the humility of marriage is to say, I'm giving you all of that.
Yeah.
Nobody else gets that but yeah. you. And if you don't look at me today or say I look cute today, then I don't get it. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not looking mm-hmm. for it online. I'm not looking for it at a coworker. Yeah. I go without because
yeah.
I'm not going to feed anything that doesn't have life.
Yeah. I love that. And then it also talks of needs and communicating needs.
Yes.
And it can go into the, it goes into this whole side of like, oh, I need this from my husband and communicating that because sometimes they're not aware. You do need to say it plainly. And I know both Ben and I have been in this place where we have been learning to just communicate plainly, like just simply, so like this is what we need. And being okay with that.
Isn't it hard?
As well.
It was so hard to do that in the beginning. Like, you know what I'm saying? No, yeah. I don't know what you're saying. It is really yeah. hard to say. It's vulnerable to say, I need this.
Yeah.
It's so vulnerable.
Yeah. But you are married to them and you want to receive that from them and not look for outside of your marriage to get those needs met.
Yeah.
So I think there's this protection in your marriage where it's like actually communicating your needs protects your marriage because it stops you from going and getting those needs fulfilled elsewhere. And even if it's fantasy, like you said in your mind, like you can fantasize very easily about another man That's fulfilling right. those needs.
That's right.
And really what we should be doing is communicating with our husband that we have these needs and allow him to fill them for us.
That's right. And a good husband will do his best. Mm-hmm. It won't be perfect, mm-hmm. but he will try and he will, and you'll have to say, remember how I like it when you say this? Remember how you didn't? And he'll go, oh yeah. And you are in the journey, but I think it's kindness to let them have a chance.
Yeah.
I totally agree. And to be honest, man, it's so hard. It's so, and unfortunately, that's the unfortunate part about being upset is that you're more honest when you're upset. Mm-hmm. And so being able to actually think about what you want, it's so scary to walk up and say, I need more sex, or I need you to slow down, or I need you to tell me I look pretty today. And I'm not insecure. I just haven't heard it in a while. Yeah. And I'm getting it over here. It's weird. It yeah. feels weird to do it. But yes. there's a part of you that's like, I can't dismiss that I need this
yes.
from somebody.
Yes.
And I would like it to be you.
Yes.
I think it's very important that we don't dismiss the femininity mm-hmm. part of us. Like, you know, like, oh, it's not a big deal. But there's a study that was done recently too, that wives are expecting their husband to meet every need.
Yeah.
And so they wait for them to get home and then they just want them to meet every need.
Wow.
And I think there's a lack of real friendship with women mm-hmm. as well. And that's a whole other conversation. I think it's complex. I think, there's a lot of mother wounds that people mm-hmm. don't talk about. That women actually are raised by women that have hurt them. And so they don't trust women
yeah.
in general, or get to grade school and have the girls treat you certain ways. And mm-hmm. women are not as safe. And I live with five guys. Guys are so much uncomfortable. I mean, they're so uncomplicated. They can be like, you're an idiot. And the next minute they're like, you want to go play basketball? And I'm as a girl, I'm like, that would take me 2 days to date over. Yes. Like I would not be able to come back. So girls are complicated, but I do think that there's a lack of genuine deep friendships that would meet some of the needs of from women mm-hmm. that they just wait for their husband to be their best friend, their confidant, once I put Ben in his spot as he's a man, he's not a female, he's not a male version of me. Yeah. He's a man.
That's great.
That's who he is.
Yeah.
And that's where he lives. And he's a one word, one answer. That's who he is. Mm-hmm. That's fine. And I want to have a conversation about things that don't matter. I'm probably going to call a friend or call a sister or call mom.
Yeah.
Cause that's okay.
Yeah.
And I remember when I first got married, I was so disappointed because I thought Ben was going to be me, but male. And I remember at one point he said to me, I don't want to walk around the mall with you and talk about clothes. And I was like, but what? Like we have our kids in the stroller. And he's like, I'm not your girlfriend. And he would do it. Like he's kind enough to do that with me. He yeah. would sit. But it was like that wake up call of like, he's right.
Yeah.
I want him to be the man in my life, yeah. but I can't treat him like a girlfriend if I want to be the man. Mm-hmm. And so that was a hard, like that took me years yeah. to learn.
Yeah.
Years.
Yeah.
Cause I thought for sure he was going to go talk about clothes and then have sex with me. So different. Yeah.
Yeah. I think there's definitely a journey in finding what needs is your husband meeting, and then what needs are your friends meeting, or what yes. needs is God meeting. And there's this beautiful thing that I'm still figuring out, like, where can I expect my husband to feel this? Where are my friends? And yeah, it's this journey that I think us newlyweds we're on. We're figuring it all out. We've never done this before. And I know that it's a journey and it's hard work and it requires intentionality. And we're making mistakes and we're learning from them, hopefully. And but marriage is, it's the real deal.
It's the real deal. And I'm so proud of you. You're asking all the right questions as a newlywed. You know, I think somebody once said, what's the one attribute you would look for in a husband? Mm-hmm. And it was to be teachable. Mm-hmm. And I think in a marriage as well, any marriage that's going to make it, the attribute is to be teachable.
Is to be teachable.
Is to learn new tricks for new dogs. And unfortunately, we haven't set you guys up for great long-term marriages because our parents haven't either. Mm-hmm. And so we're in this journey of restoring marriage.
Yeah.
Restoring marriage with all the vulnerabilities that are out there to destroy marriage.
Yeah.
Because there's real, real vulnerabilities. I don't think people are weak. I don't think people are ignorant. I think the enemy's devices are dark and demonic and the Bible says to be vigilant and sober. I think the enemy comes in like a flood and we didn't even know it was coming.
Yeah.
And so I think it's very important to have a protection, but also to not, for those that are feeling shame by maybe having let down their marriage or are newlywed and going, oh my gosh, I haven't even stayed true to my marriage and I'm only just newly married. Mm-hmm. I want to say to you, you know, the enemy is a liar and you get to rewrite your future by the choice you make today.
Yeah.
And so do it.
Absolutely.
Do it today.
And then you said teachability is key. So newlyweds. Yeah.
Yes. If you can't teach, if you are dating somebody and you can't teach them anything, do not marry them.
Wow.
Please.
Yeah.
Because that man will grow into a full grown man and he'll grow into a full grown partner and you will be the only one wanting to do things.
Yeah.
And her, to be honest, if you have a woman in your life who never asks forgiveness, who's always right, do not marry her until she knows how to ask forgiveness and knows how to humble herself because that's going to be a long, long journey. Anyway, I'm saying all this with some fear and trepidation because I mean, again, these are all from painful things. These aren't just head knowledge, just heart knowledge, but this conversation has been so cool and I love it. And I hope for all of our listeners that have been listening to this or watching this, we want to encourage you. If you're a newlywed, we're with you. We believe in you. We believe in marriage. And we, not only us, God believes in you and he believes in your marriage. And the only power we have is the choice we have today to make a change, to move forward, to give our whole hearts to our relationship. If you're in trouble, ask for help. There's no shame in that. There's places you can go. Find a Christian counselor. Find a friend who you can have coffee with that has a successful marriage and go have that conversation. But if nothing else, we want you to know that God is with you. And when you are asleep at night and you wake up and you feel like, all I want to do is cry because I don't know how to do this marriage and I don't know how to do this relationship and did I marry the wrong person? Mm-hmm. It's okay. Take a deep breath. This story, there is a future in this story. And if you'll trust God, I believe God can restore all things. And if you're brand new and you're excited and you're living your best life like Abby, listen to her words because what she shared was so true. Stay humble, stay teachable. And I promise you, you will make it if that's your, if your purpose is to do it right and to stick with truth. So I love you guys. Thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. And we'll see you next time.
See you next time.